Hello, welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns, and this is my podcast for outdoor folk who are, for reasons, for many, a variety of reasons, are indoors. This podcast is actually a result of public demand. It arose out of a series of tweets on Twitter, and it's between myself and Neil Reed talking about the kind of words we use for weather and for different kind of walks, and generally speaking, outdoor words, I guess. People are always telling me that I'm always talking about the weather. The truth is, to be honest, I'm always moaning about the weather. I specifically in Scotland, I really can't remember many times I've got on Twitter and said what wonderful weather we're having. So anyway, let's talk to Mr. Neil Reed. Hello, Neil. How are you?
Hi, John. Doing away fine. Cheers.
Brilliant, brilliant. What's the news on the bothy world at the moment, then?
I suppose I have to say the big noise on social media just now is Greg's Hut.
South
of the border. Yeah, you'll be familiar with it.
Greg's Hut. It's on the one of the few bothies. I think probably the only bothy, as far as I know, on the Pennine Way itself, isn't it? Or slightly off the Pennine Way, maybe. I'm not too sure.
Yeah. But it's a bit dilapidated these days, and many folk have seen the photograph recently of the white winter snow scene, which was taken inside the bothy.
Oh dear!
So it's sorely in need of work, and it will be very expensive to do. And the MBA launched a campaign to. An appeal, rather, to help raise funds to the work. Been a bit of a stooshy. A lot of folk got the impression that replacing the roof was going to cost £100,000. In fact, that was the budget for the whole project, including allowance for inflation.
A general refit, really. Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be an expensive project, but you're talking about a building that has to be done in a certain way because of the conservation status. So it's not a case of just putting on, slapping on a few roofing sheets or even slates. These are great big heavy sandstone slabs make the roof of this place. And it's not just the slabs that are needing replaced, or most of the slabs can be reused, but what's supporting them needs replaced. Really is a specialist job that's going to require some heavy lifting equipment apart from anything else. It is going to be an expensive job, and that's why we've launched the appeal.
Well, that sounds really well worthwhile. I mean, Greg's Hut, it's a very significant bothy, though, isn't it, in a way, really, situated, where it is. And I'm sure that it's an important bothy for the many people who sort of do the Pennine Way. I should point out for our listeners north of the border that it is called Greg's Hut, but it has absolutely no link to the famous bakers who populate the Highlands. So unfortunately, even when renovated, you won't be able to pop in for a sausage roll. So
we've maybe missed a trick there. We should have maybe approached them for sponsorship.
Well, there's still time, isn't there? You know what I mean? I would have thought so. The bothy roll. I think that there's something in, that, I'm sure we could find a link that I'll put on the page for this podcast for folk to follow if they'd like to make a wee donation. And I mean, the thing with something like Greg's Hut, even though it doesn't sell sausage rolls, once it's done up, I mean, that's it probably for about another 150 years. So although it seems it feels a bit expensive, once it's done, if you do it right, it's done. You know what I mean? And you're famous for your knowledge and I have to say probably obsession with the Cairngorms. Has anything been going on in the Cairngorms recently?
Just very recently. I just saw tweets today from Braemar Mountain Rescue Team, who had been helping Cairngorm team look for a missing person, and they were helped to find him because he, according to the BBC news story tonight, he had been at Carrer Bothy and had written in the snow which direction he was going in, which was the opposite of his original plans because of the weather. Okay. So they'd followed the arrow and managed to find him. I did wonder whether he'd only written in the snow or whether he'd thought to write in the Bothy book. That's one of the reasons that Bothy books are there, because if there is a missing person, it's one of the first things that mountain rescue teams do. They'll read the Bothy books in the area to see if there's any clues in there.
Well, that's right. And the downside of writing in the snow is that snow melts, and hopefully Bothy books don't. You know, that's probably good. Well, that's good. That's good that there was a positive outcome there. And of course, you're well aware, I suppose we should say a little bit about the sort of search and rescue that I was involved in myself, only a week or so ago. And that was a gentleman from down south who'd read Bothy Tales and was so inspired by it, he decided to come north and explore a few Bothys. But he hadn't phoned home, unfortunately. And what the police got in touch with me, and I had to give them a list of all the Bothys I'd written about, which took me a bit of doing, really, because it's a while since I wrote that book. But I'm very, very pleased to be able to tell you that he was found safe and well, and that he'd just been camping in the woods and wandered into a Bothy and was coming out and was quite happy. So I think it's a bit like, but he hadn't told anybody where he was going. And no one had heard from him for a while. So it's a bit like, you know, E.T. It's a good idea to phone home now and again. So anyway, let's have a wee chat then about all these words words for weather and words for walking that people have come up with. And one of the ones I liked was Hazel Carmichael tweeted to us, and she talked about a lazy wind. And I remember a mate from Stoke, I used to go climbing with him, and he said, oh, that's a lazy wind, that is. And a lazy wind doesn't walk around, it just goes straight through you.
I was going to say, it's an expression I've never really liked, because to me, a lazy wind, it conjures up images of sort of like gentle summer zephyrs, you know. Well, a lazy wind, it does go right through you, and it's bloody cold.
That's right. Well, talking about cold, Aberdeen, you're from Aberdeen yourself, and what sort of words can you think of from, I don't know whether they're Doric or are they, I don't know where they come from, but what sort of words spring to mind when we talk about walking and weather for yourself?
Oh, well, weather, I think, I'm not sure if there are any specifically Aberdeen words for weather, but general Scottish ones. And it'll be no surprise to anybody that probably the most common word for weather in Scotland is dreich.
Yeah. What is dreich? Define dreich for us then.
Well, it may be raining, it may be drizzle, it may even be dry, but just with a threat of rain in the air. And it's good. There's going to be a lazy wind involved somewhere, because it will be cold, it will be miserable, and probably pretty grey. So that's dreich, and that's probably what you associate with weather up here.
I think so. I think I have to confirm for anybody who's got any doubts that the coldest place on earth is in fact Union Street on Aberdeen. I have. I've been in Canada at minus 20. I've been in the Alps, and I've been on Mount Kenya, places like that. Nowhere comes close to Union Street in Aberdeen on a cold, wet Thursday night when the wind comes in off the North Sea. Has that been your experience too?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And likely there'll be a snell wind blowing as well.
Ah, now this is not, I've not heard this. A snell
wind is just a biting cold wind.
All right, okay.
Now, another common feature. Or what else is there? You see, you ask me for words and immediately my mind goes blank.
Oh, I know the feeling. Well, I've got a few. There's a few on Twitter here that are quite interesting.
For rain, there's what you call a plout of rain.
That's PL.
Oh, yeah, that's a Scottish word, I think.
Uh-huh.
It's PLOUT, and it's a short but very, very heavy cloud burst.
All right, okay. Yeah. Have you heard the word? There's a guy who is on Twitter, and I think he's a helicopter pilot. See, the word helicopter just vanished from my head there. And his name on Twitter is 661 AAC, but he talks about the word drukit. Drukit, I think.
Oh, drukit. Yeah, when you drukit is not the weather, that's you personally.
Okay.
That is when you are absolutely soaked to the point that you can't get any wetter. You're just drukit.
Oh yeah, I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah, we've all been there. It's the term that you hear often nowadays. It's popular amongst mountaineering instructors. They'll refer to a wet pants day.
Oh right, okay.
And that's, you know, when the rain has gotten through every single layer of clothing.
Oh yeah, well,
a wet pants day is when you're drukit.
That's right. A mate of mine used to say he was soaked to the wise. Right down to his white fronts, you know?
Yeah.
And, of course, there's another one. This helicopter pilot obviously knows a lot of words for weather. He's got pure Baltic. And that's freezing to the point.
Yeah.
You'll be probably be shivering and chittering away. That's really good, that one.
I don't know why, too, because as I grew up, you know, Baltic was just a term for very, very cold.
Yeah.
And yet, as I grew up, I kept seeing these photographs taken in the Baltic Sea, and it looked nice.
Oh, yeah. That's a photograph, of course, though, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, true enough.
And I was vaguely trying to remember. The brass, it was cold enough to freeze the balls of a brass monkey. And
that's an interesting one, that, because if you ask anybody about that, almost everybody will tell you it dates back to the 1800s or earlier, and British men of war, and how they carried their cannonballs, they held them on deck in a contraption called a brass monkey, and it goes on and on about how when it was very cold, the metals contracted at different rates,
mm-hmm.
and the cannonballs fell off the brass monkey. And it's all absolute codswallop.
Is it? Oh, what a shame. That should be true, though, shouldn't it? Oh, God.
Yeah, well, it should be, but it just, if you think about it, it sounds pretty unlikely. And if you look into the etymology of it, the term first came in use as it would freeze the tail or the nose off a brass monkey.
Ah, right. Okay.
It simply refers to literally the brass monkeys, the ornaments that were very, very common ornaments and gifts coming from Hong Kong in the 1800s. And of course, if you imagine, it's got to be pretty cold to freeze something off something metal, you know.
Yeah.
That's pure and simple all it was. But at some point, it's only in the 20th century that the freeze the balls off a brass monkey came about.
Right.
And it was just a vulgarization of the saying that was already there.
All right, now Bellevue Ruth has tweeted me, and she's she hasn't said what it means, but I think I know what it means. She's talking about yomp, 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 yomping.
Oh.
I think that came from the army for a long march, didn't it?
That originated, or it came to public awareness in the, was it the 80s that the Falklands War was?
Yeah, that's right. I
And
remember
that
that.
was the first time most people heard that word. And I hated it. And I'm really glad that it's disappeared. So don't revive
It's too late. It's
it.
back. It's back in possible public uses now. I've got and Adam Ledbetter. He's got a word, dreek. Now, is that of Scottish origin, dreek? And that mean to me that means cold and wet.
Yeah, that's
Oh, I'm not even saying it right.
Dreef.
Yeah, and that say it again. How do you say it?
Dreef.
Dreek. Ah, okay, fair enough.
Aye.
You see, this is the trouble. This is one of the main problems about working with an Englishman, you see. That's the
Aye.
problem.
I was warned against it, but hey.
you should have listened. Wait, talking about foreigners, some of the words that a couple of words that I really like that are in common use in sort of mountaineering. I think that they're either German or I don't know. I think they're German anyway. It's sastrugi. I really like that as a word, sastrugi. And you'll have to keep me right here. Sastrugi are the little waves that you'll sometimes see on the surface of snow. And I think I'm right in saying that they're quite significant, sastrugi, because what those little waves tell you is that this is educational, isn't it? Is that snow didn't fall direct from the sky and land there. It originally fell somewhere else and has been dumped by the snow, by the wind. And that means if you see sastrugi, you're actually looking at what they call wind slab. And wind slab, it very much depends on how well it's bonded with the layers below. Wind slab can be very prone to avalanche. Now, did I get that? Was that right, Mr. Reed?
I'm not really very sure, John. My recollection was that sastrugi were remnants of footprints, but I could be wrong in that.
Ah,
My
no.
understanding was they showed the snow was being eroded there because as somebody had walked across snow, their feet had compacted the snow under them,
Yes, I know what
and
you
then
mean. Yeah.
as the wind blew, the snow where they'd stood was more resistant to being blown away.
Yes. So
But
you get like
I may
raised
be mixing
bits.
that up with another word. So.
Maybe, I don't know. We see we've reached the ultimate of confusion. So maybe people could set us right. Where does sastrugi come from, and what does that mean? And the other word I really like, which is kind of linked in a way, I suppose, is grapple. And grapple. Now, hey, I may be wrong here again. Grapple is basically hailstones that have fallen and they sort of fall in a layer sometimes. And if you've got wind slab on top of grapple, then
Bad news.
you're in trouble basically, because they're like
Yeah.
ball bearings. That's the best way of describing them, and anything can roll off them. So well, I don't think we've really advanced public knowledge there very much.
Also, I think Graupel's benefits are very much unsung.
Really?
Yeah, there's a mountaineering instructor, Di Gilbert. She just tweeted recently about its qualities as I've forgotten the word for when you scour your skin,
Oh,
exfoliant.
yeah, obviously that's a part of my daily skincare
Yeah.
regime. That is, yeah.
Well, she reckons she'd spent fortunes on over-the-counter exfoliants, but Graupel and a on a strong wind was equally effective.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. I did
That's
get
somewhere else we've all been.
I did get stopped in the shopping mall here, or arcade, or whatever you call it, by people who had set up to sell skincare regimes. And then the woman said to me, "Can I ask you what your skincare regime is?" And I said, "Well, just take one look at me. Do you think I use a skincare regime? Or if I do, it isn't very good, let's face it." And what about actual walks and stuff? I like the word, is it daunder? I go for a, or I'll go for a dander. I don't know where that...
Well, no, dander, you would get your dander up. That's when you get, you give in to temper.
Oh, right.
The walking one is a daunder.
Daunder, that's it.
And that's a nice word. It's just a daunder is just a relaxing wander.
A stroll, in other words. Yeah. That sounds right. And
there's no end. Well, there is an end, but there's several words for walking in Scots, and not many of them mean going flat out on a military yomp.
Okay.
You know, you've got stravaging, which...
That's a great word, isn't it? Stravaging,
word. It's sort of a cross between wandering and exploring. It's not aimless as such. You might not have a destination in mind.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, when you're stravaging, you're going to new places, learning as you go. You know, I see stravaging as a pretty positive sort of thing, as opposed to wandering, which might be completely aimless.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for stravaging, I think, because we tend to walk a lot from point to point, particularly those of us who tick off summits, you know. But stravaging suggests that I suppose you find what interests you and what takes your fancy along the way and you follow that. And I guess that's more the sort of thing I do. I spend half an hour watching a bee or something.
I think stravaging, you could maybe summarize it by saying, you know, there may be summits involved, but they're not important.
Yeah.
I once arrived at the summit of Ben McDooey, and I met a mountain leader that I knew who was up with a group of folk. And it was curious. He said to me, "Hi, Neil, where are you going today?" Now, I was just reaching the top of the second highest mountain in Britain. Which, you know, you might think that was a destination in itself. And for most folk, it probably was. But, you know, the guy said, "Where are you going today?" And he was right. That wasn't my destination at all. I was headed somewhere else. I just went via the top.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I like that. One of the other, I can't remember who mentioned it on Twitter, but I used to think that this was, this is again going back to the weather. Somebody was talking about it being an overcoat warmer somewhere. And I think that's quite good. Measuring temperature in terms of overcoats. That wouldn't work terribly well if you were climbing Everest, because by the time you got to the top, you'd have about 50 overcoats on.
It's not really a Scottish term, that an overcoat warmer.
No.
The Scottish equivalent would be, it's a big coat day.
Ah, I like that. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Your big coat is your serious jacket. You know, that's what you would put on in Scotland. If the world was coming to an end in snow and ice, then it's a big coat day. Ordinary blizzard, you'll get fine with your jacket.
Right.
Big coat is for the nuclear option, you know.
That's the serious one. Well, I'm old enough to remember, this is going back years and years ago. I had a big coat. This is going back to when great coats, the old army great coats, were fashionable. And they were brilliant. You put an army great coat, you could pretty much withstand anything if you had your long great coat on. In fact, Mark Bidwell, he's tweeted, he's in Nottingham. And I remember it, and he says, we used to say someone was Nesh if they felt cold. Nesh. Now, that's a, I think, I associate that word actually with Barnsley, but because I had a girlfriend in Barnsley who said, you know, she when she was cold, she'd say, oh, I'm right, Nesh, you know. And she also
a foreign word to me, John.
I Nesh. Well, yeah, I know you very rarely sort of pass south of the border, but it is possible, although it may be inadvisable. But and she also used to say, I could eat a scabby donkey when she was hungry. Oh, no.
See, nobody up here would eat a scabby donkey. It's a scabby horse that we eat.
Is that right? Well, it was good that she would have that kind of appetite, because if I was cooking, by God, she'd need to be able to eat a scabby donkey, you know? It's fascinating. I mean, there was a word that Dermot Crosgrove from Ireland said his mum used to use. And she'd say, and I think it was from when it wasn't absolutely wild pissing down, just to rent, it's a great soft day. That's an Irish one. A soft day, I think, I quite like that.
Yeah, so it's soft day. I mean, Dermot would correct me, I'm sure, but to me, a soft day is drizzle and mist.
Drizzle and mist. Well, I think they have a fair bit of that in Ireland. From what I think 364 days of the year, and then it takes a day off, you know.
It doesn't get to be the Emerald Isle without a bit of rain.
It has been known to rain. It has. You're quite right. The last one I've got time to do now. Stephen Whiteman. He come in. I like this one. I like it. This is for when it's dark and it's cloudy. It's looking black over Bill's mothers. Oh, I'm sorry. It says with the emphasis on Bill. It's looking black over Bill's mothers. I don't know. I quite like that.
I'm really not sure about that one. I've never heard it before.
And, no, me neither. Me neither.
Not entirely clear where that would have come from.
No,
unless it was one of those very local expression, and Bill's mother lived in the West, and that was where the cloud came from.
I never thought of that. Well, listen, it's been great talking to you, and we've had some entertaining ones. And if anybody listening's got words that we've missed or words we've corrupted, please feel free to get in touch and tell me. But it's been a lot of fun, Neil. Thanks very much for talking to me, and I'll look forward to talking to you again.
Aye, cheers, John. No bother. Bye.
Okay, thanks then. Well, thanks very much to Neil Reed for coming on the show. I do hope you've you've enjoyed our ramblings, as to be said. But some interesting stuff there. And if we missed any phrases for weather or walking you really think we should know about, then do get in touch, tweet or whatever you like, you know. And if I could ask you, if you enjoyed our musings, if you enjoyed listening to two old codgers sitting in front of the bothy fire, then if you give us a wee subscribe, you can hear more similar stuff. I'm currently pestering, it has to be said, a variety of people into speaking to me, including Jeff Allen, who wrote the definitive book on bothies, the Bothy Bible. And I'm pursuing various other people who, although they're doing their best to resist, I think I'll get you eventually. Anyway, I do hope you've enjoyed listening to us, and I hope you'll join me again on Outside In. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.